Want to learn the Macarena?
I can't. I promised Hilda and Zelda I'd do my homework.
Sabrina, we need to talk.
Did I do something wrong?
No, it's just your priorities. Isn't this obsession with homework getting in the way of your fun?
Well, I have to study.
Why?
Because you can't have fun all the time.
Why not? Think about that while we join a conga line.
Ladies, gentlemen, Chad, Corey, Dylan, welcome to episode number 7 of Sabrina's Witch Trials. This is, of course, the podcast where each week I take a friend of mine back into the mid-1990s to rewatch, review, and reminisce all about everybody's favorite Friday night spellfest, Sabrina Teenage Witch. I'm Alex Adouju, and as I said, this is a Sabrina Teenage Witch podcast. If you were looking for a podcast about noted interior designer Sabrina Soto, try Sabrina's Stitch Files. Or it doesn't exist. No one would listen to that. It makes no sense at all. How you doing, folks? Big week here over at Sabrina's Witch Trials. Not only did I have quite the tete-a-tete with one Caroline Ray of Hilda fame, and that one season that she hosted that talk show, which nobody really liked, a lot of stuff's been going on. Listenership has been going up. We've had more reviews on the iTunes, which is always nice to see, so thank you everybody for that. And in kind of a little treat for all of you, I've brought back everyone's favorite guest host to talk about this incredible episode. Really, I use the word incredible a lot, but seldom has the word incredible fit so perfectly in what we're going to talk about than it has right now. We're going to be talking about episode 7, and to talk about it, I brought on Christine Adouju, Chris Adouju, who are friends. I forget literally every time. I don't know why, because it's not like I ever call her Christina otherwise.
No.
It's not like when I'm mad at her, I call her Christina. I'm not her mumsy.
She calls me Dina.
She does. My mom hasn't learned Chris's name.
Or Christina Maria.
Chris Adouju, that media maven from ChrisConquers.com, is here. Yep. Chris, how are you doing? We haven't spoken in 3 episodes.
Oh my god.
Not since Terrible Things.
Months.
It has been about a month. More than a month. What's new with Chris? That's all, folks.
Thanks. I don't know. Not much, really.
Yeah.
Same old.
Boring old bitty.
Boring old bitty for life.
Go to boringoldbitty.net.
Dot poor. Dot life.
Dot China.
LYF.
Yeah. Chris is boring. No, she's not. Yeah, she's great. She's going to be fun on this episode, or I'll strangle her to death.
I'm the fun kind of boring.
That's right.
You know, like chilling at home with some popcorn.
Everybody remembers those ads that the public library ran, right? Where they were the fun kind of boring.
First of all, if they ever ran those ads,
yeah,
they would have pulled me right in.
You already go there. It's not like...
Yeah, but I mean...
We're not trying to attract the people who already go there, Chris.
Our library, I think, is having an Oktoberfest.
They are the... it's a bunch of, it's like German singers.
About to get rowdy up and pop in Houston.
And like a quick march around town. It's fun.
Yeah.
That's as far as I'll go with the German jokes. Or else the Chancellor of Germany. The Chancellor of Germany, Michael Cassis, will get at me. Yeah. Oh, you don't listen to the Mike episodes.
I just didn't. Not that I don't. Not like, Mike, don't think that I like hate you or something.
I won't do it. I call Mike actually the Prime Minister of Germany.
Oh.
Because he needed a title, so I gave him one. Chris,
mm-hmm.
I don't know about you, but I've had a fun today because today was fun for me, and that's why I had a fun today. The weather.
Thank you for explaining that.
The weather is finally turning autumn-y.
It's nice.
So, you know, it's still sunny.
Don't expect it to last, though.
I know, it's going to go up, but it's still sunny, but there's a breeze all the time. I can go walk by the water. I'm a very happy old man, indeed. Also.
Boring old biddies for life.
That's right. The day we were recording this, American Horror Story just debuted last night for season 6. I watched it, didn't like it a lot. I think it's still better than Hotel, though. So there's that to look forward to.
I think I stopped watching Hotel after 4 episodes.
I stopped after 2.
And I stopped watching, what was the other one? The one before.
Freak Show.
Freak Show. I stopped watching Freak Show when they got up to the Halloween episode. No. I think the Halloween episode was like the last one I watched. And then I just had to drop it. So, hiccup.
There you go. Sorry. We're going to keep that in. And hopefully it doesn't happen again or somebody will be killed.
No, I usually just hiccup once. It's not like a
that's right. Chris gets hiccups like everyone else gets chicken pox. It's one and then she's done.
Whenever I drink soda, it's like the first sip or right after the first sip, I'll hiccup.
Yeah, I didn't like it a lot, but it's, like I said, still better than Hotel. I also started reading a Goosebumps book today because I wanted to see why people liked it in the 90s. Because I'm really trying to make my life just like a regular person's life in 1996. I started Curse of Camp Cold Lake. Ooh, it's Camp Cold Lake. It's interesting because the character is like the most like snarky and like...
He's just you?
No, it's a girl. She's the most snarky and millennial kind of 12-year-old. It's ridiculous. She's like, oh, God, swimming's great, but you can't swim with pizza and fries. And it's like, oh, my God, you're every meme from the last 3 years.
I can't even swim. That's right. No, I can't. I really can't.
I'm like 5 chapters in, and to be fair, each chapter is like 3 pages, so I'm 15 pages in. I also watched an episode of Arthur today. You remember the one where all of his friends are like...
Where he gets pumpkin spice lattes?
That's the one. Okay. No, the one where all of his friends are like obsessed with that cootie catcher that Prunella has. And they all think it can predict the future.
Yes.
Cootie catchers are such a 90s thing. You don't see kids with cootie catchers anymore.
Mm. It's because it's a trade that they just haven't learned.
Now they're all with their
fucking... Who's teaching the tradesmen of the future? That's what I want to know.
I always loved cootie catchers. Like, that was the best part of school. Was when somebody had one of those and just like being able to do the thing where you bing bang. The only thing that would be better, actually, as a little aside, Arthur's website actually offers an Arthur cootie catcher, but all of the fortunes are like, in the next week, you'll walk by a house as big as Muffy's. And it's like, what the hell do I care about that? I'm going to walk by a house one day? That's not great.
You don't care about your house, Muffy.
You will have ears like Arthur. Working? I don't know. But anyway, the one thing better than an Arthur cootie catcher would be a Sabrina the Teenage Witch cootie catcher. It's a shame those don't exist.
Oh, no.
Well, look at this.
Is that what you spent your day doing?
I spent like 20 minutes making a Sabrina the Teenage Witch cootie catcher, and now I can do that cootie catcher hand thing as much as I want. Chris, would you like your fortune told?
Sure.
All right, pick a color. Green, pink, blue, or yellow.
I thought you had to pick a number first.
First you pick a color, and then you do the letters of the color.
Okay.
And then you pick a number, and then you pick another number, and that's your fortune.
All right, what are the colors?
Red, pink, blue, green, yellow.
Green.
G-R-E-E-N. Pick a number, 1, 2, 5, or 6.
5.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Pick another number, 3, 4, 7, 8.
3.
1, 2, 3, and pick your fortune, 1, 2, 5, 6.
6.
Your fortune is your cousin will imprison you in a jar. Sorry, Chris.
Damn it, Carlos.
He's going to sneak up and get you right in there.
It's probably Roberto.
There you go. I love these things.
My life is in a jar.
If you just hear this sound during the podcast, you know what I'm doing.
Wait, let me read yours. Okay. Come on.
Let's keep this quick. We're already 8 minutes into the show, and we haven't talked about this incredible episode. All right.
Pick a color.
Pink.
P-I-N-K. 8, 3, 7, or 4?
4.
1, 2, 3, 4. 8, 3, 7, or 4?
3.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 5, or 6?
5.
You will play foosball with Harvey at the Slicery.
Oh, baby.
Jelly.
Whew. Al's going to have a fun night after this podcast with Harvey with the good hair. All right.
Harvey
folks,
with the good hair.
We are going to start on this incredible episode of Superdemon Teenage Witch. But before we do, Chris, you know my rule about guests and their descripting of things. That's a word.
Descripting of things.
That's right. You have to give me a description of this episode of Superdemon Teenage Witch in exactly 8 words. And a coherent sentence.
Sabrina moves to the Pleasure Dome with Vesta.
I'll take it. And it's accurate.
Yeah.
Okay. As all of Chris's descriptions are, if there's one thing you can say about them, they're accurate. All right.
They're not always the number you ask for, but they're accurate.
Episode number 7, Third On From the Sun. Let's get started here. This episode is actually the first, written by noted writer and voice of a cat, Nick Bouquet. So he actually writes a lot of good ones coming up in the future. First aired November 8th, 1996. 16.2 million viewers, a 10.2 rating, a 17 share, and this was the 26th most viewed show on television that week. The episode basically starts out in Sabrina's house where she and Zelda are coming down the steps and she's really nagging Zelda to let her get a belly button ring because it's 1996. Zelda basically tells her, no, you can't have one, and that's our belly button, and you get it back when you're 18. Giving her the old mom routine. They walk into the kitchen and Hilda piles on telling her that she'll regret it, and then goes on to talk about her weird-ass tattoo.
Cromwell rules.
That she had to wait 2 centuries to get removed from her shoulder. Although Zelda then throws a bunch of shade and is just like, bitch, that's not where it was.
I had to wait 2 centuries to have the Cromwell rules tattoo removed from my shoulder.
That's not where it was.
Be quiet.
It was on your, I don't know.
Tushum.
Hooter. I don't know. Is that boob? Is that vagina? Who knows? Zelda then goes on to tell the rebel Sabrina that she can't get the belly button piercing again. And Sabrina tells her that she'll wait till she's 18. But when she does, she's getting everything pierced. Just everywhere. Like random pieces of skin on her body, all pierced.
Party girl.
She heads out to leave for school and Zelda throws a particularly like stanky
finger
poke of doom.
The stanky finger.
It's
sequel to Stanky Leg.
It's dangerous. And Sabrina returns with like a tribal nose bone piercing thing. Sabrina then gives us a couple of hilarious remu de bon. Like that's all she can say. And I loved it a few times before she just sits down telling her that they're not going to school. And then we get like a tribal beady kind of bit of music to close out this opening here. It was cold open.
Okay, very funny. Now remove the bone. Remove the bone! I'm not going to school like this!
Chris.
Yes?
Did you like the tribal beat? Did you like the remove the bow? What did you think here?
I thought it was accurate for the time. I mean, everyone wanted a belly button piercing. Yep. That was the thing to do. And
she eventually gets one, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, Melissa Joan Hart was no doubt rocking a belly piercing.
Yep.
With a blue stone in it or something.
Like a little cat hanging off of her belly button.
See, that would have... No, no.
Like a little photo of Caroline Ray. Time.
It would have been like a little blue crystal that just catches the light.
Work. All right. yes, it was of the time, but...
Also, Cromwell rules.
Cromwell.
He doesn't actually.
Do you know who Cromwell is?
Yes.
Who is he, Chris?
I know Cromwell from watching The Tudors.
Okay.
And he basically was very manipulative in the...
English.
Thank you, yeah.
Military.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know him more in terms of like... Because I literally learned about it through The Tudors. Mm-hmm. Just at court and... Yeah.
He was a politician.
Yeah.
Oliver Cromwell... he was actually famous for being one of the signatures to the death warrant of Charles I. Also, one, who gets a fucking tattoo of Oliver Cromwell telling people that he rules? And
he
two,
had a lot of power.
So did he like force Hilda to get it?
No, she just
liked his power.
Digs the power.
Fair enough. Two, who was giving like tattoos in 1599
to 1658?
Ye old fucking dirtbag.
They did exist. I mean, they weren't. Yeah. They weren't.
If you went to those tribal places,
they weren't as prevalent in England.
No. What did you think of Sabrina's outfit here, Chris? I almost asked you what you thought of Chris's outfit.
I I liked it and I didn't like it at the same time. Mm-hmm. I thought it was very 90s.
Oh, yeah.
She's got some mom jeans on. I think it was like a very light gray turtleneck.
Yeah, and like a beige kind of.
A brown suede vest.
Oh, yeah. Like, I like this. I don't know about you, but I love this. Mm-hmm. For some reason, like I've commented earlier, but I don't like her in suede a lot. Mm-hmm. But, and I think I've actually seen this vest and hated it then, but there's something about all the earth tones mixing together with the whitewash.
Vest. See my vest.
Splice.
See my vest. See my vest. Made from real gorilla chest. Feel this sweater. There's no better than authentic Irish setter. See this hat. 'Twas my cat. My evening wear. Vampire bat. These white slippers are albino. African endangered rhino. Grizzly bear underwear. Turtles necks. I've got my share. Beret of poodle on my noodle. It shall rest. Try my red robin suit. It comes one breast or two. See my vest, see my vest, see my vest.
Something about like the whitewashed jeans and the vest and the turtleneck that all came together into a wonderful earth tony 90s bit of goodness.
It's
I liked
like
it.
The epitome of 90s fall fashion. Yep.
Ring
like,
ring Delia's, I'll take yeah. two, please.
It was very, I don't know. It was good. Mm-hmm. Obviously not something I would wear now.
Who knows?
But I liked it for what it was, and I remember how cool that would have been back in the day. Also, did you notice her hair? She had like a half up, half down hair.
I didn't know.
But then it was like full, like wrapped, and like I can't even explain it to you. Like it was.
You can't even.
No, I can't. So it was kind of like looped.
Yeah.
And then it was like tied again, and like
I'll be sure to check up on this hair.
I can't explain it. I'm sorry.
I didn't like the fact that Zelda like gives her a piercing because it doesn't really get the point that she's trying to get across. The point this makes is that you should do what your elders tell you or else they'll give you a bone piercing.
No, I think it was more of, oh, you'll get everything right. pierced, huh? Okay, we'll see how you like this
that's
one.
That's not a good way to parent. And Zelda's supposed to be the good parent.
Well, you're basically throwing around ideas like, oh, you know, I'm just going to get everything pierced. And she's showing her that that's not actually what you want in the most physical way possible.
Right. But I don't know. But the thing is, this isn't what Sabrina says is an overreaction, of course. But this doesn't really teach her to consider what she wants. What this teaches her is I will punish you by giving you a bone through your nose.
It's the whole thing of, oh, I caught you smoking. All right, we'll smoke the whole pack.
Right, but that never works. That just makes people smoke.
It does work. No, it makes them sick. And then they never want to touch a cigarette again.
Yeah.
It does work. I mean, it's the most.
I would guess most of the people who that happened to.
It's a very manipulative form of
would
parenting, but.
Continue smoking. I think that would just. Well,
no, most people don't.
You know what? Listener, if you had that happen to you, if your parents made you smoke a bunch of ciggies, Siggy Stardust, just that's a joke, I guess. Reach out to me on Twitter at Sabrina Podcast and let me know, and we'll chat. Back to the show, though. In Westbridge, in the halls of Westbridge, Sabrina is doing some good old rump shaking and singing some good old funky song.
Shake your whammy, fanny, funky song.
Hey, what are you singing?
Nothing.
Here we go, baby. Listen.
Is this the first time? Is it?
This is the first appearance of Funky Song to my knowledge. And man, do I fucking love Funky Song. Let's get this out of the way right now. What an incredible song. I'm using the word incredible a lot, but really, it deserves. What a stupendous
catchy ass song.
It's got a great, sexy kind of 90s dance beat. It's got stupid lyrics. It's the
And it's not. It's such a clean song.
Yep.
Like, it's clean in the most funky way.
The lyrics mean nothing. Shake your whammy fanny. Apparently, by the way, in England when this aired, they changed shake your whammy fanny to shake your whammy funky song because fanny is a term for vagina.
No, fanny's for your butt, I think.
No, fanny's for vagina.
I don't think so.
Google
it. I'm pretty sure fanny.
Google it while I talk more about funky song.
All
right. Incredible. And me being somebody who loves like early 90s club jams, like anything by Hadaway or Real McCoy, I was in heaven here, folks. But basically what happens here is Jenny walks up and
slang for the buttocks. apparently it's also
yeah.
chiefly British vulgar slang for the female genitals.
Bang.
So it's both.
Fanny bang.
Suck it. I guess maybe I always thought it was butt though.
No, you well here it's butt. There it's like vagina. But Jenny walks up to Sabrina and asks her to go to the movies with her. And Sabrina says, sure, we can go on Saturday night, but I have a curfew. And Jenny's all, wow, you're so lucky. Your parents give you rules. My parents don't make me do anything, and I hate it, which is bullshit, but we'll get there in a minute. We hear more funky song coming from Mr. Poole's class, and Sabrina feels the need to sashay into the room.
Mm-hmm. With her arms out.
Some well done sashaying.
There's a lot of white people dancing up in that classroom.
There was. I'm pretty sure there might have been some black people
there
sitting there not
looked.
Dancing.
I looked. No, they were dancing. Everyone
arms
was
crossed.
Dancing. But there was a lot of white people dancing.
Mr. Poole quickly comes in and tells them to shut down the music. And Harvey and Mr. Poole have a fun little exchange about the music of the 70s.
Which was amazing, so I didn't get the joke.
Right? That's the weird thing. Yeah. Is like, I kind of like the 70s music. Most of the stuff on my Spotify starred list is from like 1970 to 1979.
Love it.
Shake your whammy, Fanny. Oh, please. You know, in my day, we had good music.
Mr. Poole, didn't you grow up in the 70s?
Yes. Never mind.
Mr. Poole, as I said, shuts down the music, and then he begins with his lecture on the skin. But he quickly breaks out into a scratching fit, and that leads him to not only scratch, but like hopscotch out of the room.
Yep.
Which, for the little that Paul Feig does here, that was pretty impressive in this episode. He gets some more impressive stuff later, though.
Oh, yeah, super impressive.
Just as Sabrina, Jenny, and Harvey are all like, well, if the teacher's not here, we can leave, right? And then basically the whole class agrees in silence and gets up to leave.
That's how it goes.
College, that is how it goes. Just as they're about to leave, Vesta walks in, their substitute teacher, who introduces herself as Vesta and also introduces herself as...
an Aries.
That's right. So check your...
sisters.
Check your calendars, folks. She basically turns Harvey into like a puddle of goo by asking him what Mr. Poole was teaching.
Yep.
Which, to be fair, I mean, we'll get there, but Jesus Christ. Whew. Raquel Welch, baby. Anyway, Vesta basically picks up the lesson where Mr. Poole left off by telling the kids that skin basically means moisturize and use an exfoliant. That's the skin lesson
that
you need.
This is good advice. It is very
Again,
good advice.
Raquel Welch.
She knows what she's talking about.
She clearly has quite the regiment.
Mm-hmm. Regiment.
Sabrina then protests. Is a regiment.
Regiment is like army.
Regiment is the smell of the moisturizer she uses.
Regiment.
It's regiment.
Yeah, got it.
Sabrina then begins to protest and is like, this is biology?
Because this is biology?
Spot on. Vesta then gets what she's saying. Is like, oh, you want a real lesson? And then busts out into a full, like, well.
She breaks it down.
She turns on funky song and commences to prance. No. She like goes into a full involved lecture about skin, including the word ranials, which I'm sure is some part of the skin. Why would they make that up? She tells
all
the kids.
All lies. All lies.
She tells the kids they can all leave, but she calls Sabrina's high to talk to her, and Sabrina's all, oh, am I in trouble? And Vesta with a fake out says, yes. And I can't even hold her laughter and is like, no. Don't you remember me? And then we find out that it's not just Vesta, it's Sabrina's aunt Vesta. You might say she's the third aunt from the title. She's the third aunt in the title. We find out that apparently Sabrina once met Andy Warhol as a baby, which yep. Quite the interesting reference. And just then Sabrina realizes that she's a little late for her next class, but Vesta's like, come on, we have some catching up to do. Let's go get coffee in Paris. And then...
Let's talk about the scene first.
Let's talk about the scene before okay. we get to Paris. Absolutely. But there's one last thing I missed. To give Sabrina a hint about who she is, she changes her clothes
glasses.
Magically.
Yeah.
But she changes her clothes magically to like a CNC Music Factory kind of little like music bit there. I liked it a lot. And you just heard it. Chris, this scene is jam-packed beyond funky song.
Yep, it is. There's a lot.
Where do you want to start?
Okay, let's start with Sabrina asking, what does moisturizer have to do with science?
Bitch.
Don't be dumb, Sabrina. Moisturizer.
Yeah.
Moisturizer is science.
Your moisturizer regiment is important.
It didn't just like, it doesn't come off trees like that. Like, that is science. The science of beauty. Like, absolutely. It takes...
Chris is offended for...
I'm sorry, but it takes serious scientists and lots of work to create moisturizers.
That's true. Noted beauty blogger Christina
Dugan. I'm sorry. It's just like, bitch, what the fuck are you talking about?
Fair enough.
Moisturizers are science.
I mean...
Yeah.
What did you think of the character Vesta as we meet her here? Because we find out and discover way more about Vesta, both as a character and a performance in the future. But in this little bit scene, what did you think of, one, the character, two, Raquel Welch's performance?
I think straight up, when she walks into the classroom, you know she's a bad bitch. And like, she's just fabulous. Like, fabulous radiates off of her. I mean, you've got that red pantsuit, which...
Oh!
Red double-breasted pantsuit with a white dress shirt.
Dead.
And
I'm dead.
And black, like, it was like a satin tie. And, which you notice when she changes her clothes, leopard print platforms.
I did not see that.
Yeah.
But...
I was looking.
I mean, just the clothes here for a second, because I'm a bit of a clothes horse when it comes to, you know, 1996 Teen Witch series. I love most everything Vesta wears in this episode. That first outfit, though, is my favorite by far.
Yeah.
Because while it's the most
understated.
Understated. Yeah.
It's not understated, really.
It's a big red suit.
Yeah.
It is beautifully tailored.
Yeah.
It fits Raquel Welch like a glove. It looks gorgeous on her. And it's just so striking when you see it compared to, like, the kind of blandness of the rest of the room and all the earth tones. It's stunning in every way.
Yeah.
Raquel Welch as an actress, though, I thought was also stunning in just about every way.
She's awesome. I feel like, and we'll come to this later, but I feel like there were some moments that were really awkward, mm-hmm. but you don't really pick up on it. When I was a child and I was watching it, I didn't pick up on it. But there are some awkward moments, which I think have more to do with the writing, mm-hmm. where Sabrina will say something and they'll give her like a one-off, like, uh-huh. I know, or like, you're telling me like the stupidest shit. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, I know you're giving it your best. It's just awkward as hell.
I loved all of those little things.
She's giving it her all. Like, she really is.
It's great. Like, it's some of the best things said in those scenes. Durhey is my favorite. I might just make it my text message notification now. I mean, I love all those things. I think.
When does she say that?
She says Durhey when Hilda and Zelda like break in on them at the Pleasure Dome for the first time. Like, mm-hmm. when they're like, oh, you tricked us. But we're coming up to that in a little while. But I think her performance is so like bright and bubbly and has such a carefree
confident.
Quality. And it's really beautifully like juxtaposes against the kind of like drudgery that is the usual performances in the series. You know, most of the way Melissa Joan Hart says things is very like, you know, passive and depressive.
She's a teenager.
Yeah. And even like, you know, Hilda has a bit of brightness in her, but Zelda's more lecturing than anything else. So
yeah.
It just, you know, as soon as you see her and as soon as you see Raquel Welch's performance, it's so striking.
Sabrina, we need to talk.
Did I do something wrong?
Yes. Oh, don't you recognize me?
Should I?
I'll give you a hint. I am your Aunt Vesta.
Let me guess, from my father's side of the family?
Bingo! I even carry a photo of me holding you as a baby.
Oh, look, there's Aunt Hilda and Aunt Zelda. Is that Andy Warhol?
Those were the good times. I don't know why, but the 80s are always the best decade of every century.
Oh, look, I'd really love to stay and talk, but I've got to get to class.
Don't be silly. We have a lot of catching up to do. Now, where can we find a good cup of coffee? Oh, I know. Paris.
I also just realized, if you think about it, in terms of the progression of Vesta's wardrobe, mm-hmm. she's much more classic and tailored when she's in the mortal realm and much more like crazy patterns, like cuts, velvet when she's in
Queen of the Nile looks.
We'll get to that. When she's in the Pleasure Dome. So I think that's really interesting in terms of like what it says about, I guess, society or, you know, what what you're really able to show in life, like, or in of your personality in, you know, the mortal realm versus the pleasure dome. Like, yeah. There's a freeness that literally just comes out of you.
There's an infinite number of possibilities, and that carries on into the clothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's
it's
one.
Interesting. I didn't think about it before.
Oh, yeah. There's a.
Oh, yeah. I totally saw
No, that. I have it noted down somewhere.
Liar.
I have it noted down somewhere as you write it down. Just one other thing here. This is actually where we get the repetition of the joke from Terrible Things, where the newspaper is a weekly.
I haven't watched Terrible Things yet.
You were on the episode.
Oh, the episode. I thought you meant, like, is it, what is it? Show? Oh, no. Stranger Things.
You were thinking of Stranger
Things.
Yeah,
I was like, don't ruin anything.
How would, Chris, how exactly would a show filmed in 1996 repeat a joke from a show?
I don't know. Maybe it references a joke. Who knows?
It doesn't, know.
It's possible.
We get the repetition of the joke from the weekly. Terrible Things episode where the school paper is a weekly edition. Yeah. This is where it was. Moving forward, though. In Paris, which is a phrase I don't get to use enough, the two witches are drinking Central Perk style bowls of coffee.
That's what I'm about to rant about. So.
near a window overlooking definitely the real Eiffel Tower. Sabrina notes that her aunts never let her drink coffee, and Vesta says that they're probably just full of can'ts and don'ts, and does a very good impression of them, almost digitally good.
Yes, the evil bean.
Yes.
What the fuck?
We'll talk about the evil bean in a second, though. She also mentioned that she can't stand being around mortals for too long. And then Sabrina points out that she's one. And she's half mortal. And Vesta basically says, not that there's anything wrong with that, as we're getting some more of that pseudo, you know, being a witch is akin to being a homosexual talk.
You mean mortal?
Yes, but before it was being a witch. Now it's being immortal. Not being all of one thing is akin to being a homosexual in the 90s, apparently. Anyway, Sabrina eventually asks what happened to Mr. Poole, and Vesta tells us that she gave him a 24-hour bug, and we get a smash cut to Mr. Poole basically fighting a low-level Power Rangers villain in his dingy, dingy bathroom.
But spacious. Spaciously dingy.
Big, but really grimy. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't want to drop a deuce in that one.
Did you notice the, like, tiger on the wall? There's a tiger painting or, like, picture? There
tiger
is.
Wall. Tiger walls. We're not even going to get into those references. We go back to Vesta, and she goes on to say that unlike mortals, like Mr. Poole, witches can avoid reality if they choose, and that's why she lives in the Pleasure Dome. Great name.
Yep.
Also sounds like a sex toy, but that's besides the point. She tells Sabrina that she can come visit her if she wants, but Sabrina doesn't think her aunts will let her. Vesta then ominously says they'll just have to convince them as we cut there. Chris.
Yes.
Paris.
Yes.
First things first. You spent a number... Great reference. Yeah. You spent a number of months in Paris.
5 months.
How big are the cups of coffee?
They're
over
tiny.
There?
It's not a thing that you see in Europe to have giant coffee. It's literally the opposite. They have tiny coffee. Yeah. And the idea that coffee is big is this, like, an American invention. Like, Americano is a larger coffee. And even an Americano is never that big.
Three it's sips like, and I'm already vibrating.
It's like a regular, like, 8-ounce mug of coffee. And that is a lot of coffee for the Parisians. So that would never happen. Also, the fact that that mug bowl is obviously empty pissed me off.
That's something you see in all shows.
I mean, I get it. You do it for continuity, but because, you know, when you're cutting and resetting and they're naturally taking sips,
you don't want to see something more filled later on than it is before.
It did bug me once. I was watching Pretty Little Liars and they ordered like a coffee drink with like... with whipped cream on top.
Yep.
And the actress was like mixing it with her straw. And there are parts where you can see the cream is full and then where you can see it mixed and it would cut back and forth. And it is annoying, but it bothers me much more when I can tell that something is obviously empty and no one is drinking.
Yeah.
Like, just put water in it, something clear, like you're not necessarily going to see, but that I can tell that you're actually drinking.
To your point earlier about weird things that Vesta is to say.
Yeah.
There's a scene or there's an exchange here at the very beginning of this scene where Sabrina says, "You know what the weirdest thing is? I'm missing French class to be here." And then Vess is just like, no, honey, that's not the weirdest thing.
And then goes to tell her story and then was like, no.
Never mind.
Better not.
I still thought it was fucking hilarious.
You know the weirdest thing? I'm missing French class to be here.
No, that's not the weirdest thing. I once... Oh, no, never mind.
I laughed a little bit, which is what means fucking hilarious in my mind. I thought here also Raquel Welch does a good job of giving somewhat sinister or like even insulting lines about mortals at some time, at some point, but not really losing that likability that her character has. Like you with all the things she says here, you know, some characters you might be like, oh, this guy's kind of a dickhole. Vessa is just like, well, she's just an eccentric and I like her eccentricities.
Yeah. Yes, the evil bean.
Oh, the evil bean.
Awkward as hell.
The and evil bean.
Of all the ways to say it.
Yes, the evil bean.
Of all the ways to say it, it's the most random, like, people don't talk like that. And I understand Vestas from the other realm and she's eccentric, but it was just so weird and awkward.
Again, I liked it a lot. The evil bean, we will actually see referenced, like, 15, 16 episodes down the line when Harvey and Sabrina go on a date to a place called the Evil Bean. So somebody really liked that terminology and printed it on cups. One last thing. The Mr. Pool thing.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was an okay joke, but, big but, that fucking giant bug suit.
Yeah.
He's wrestling a giant bug. I don't know if I touched on that. I hope so.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, you said he was a Power Rangers villain reject.
He's fighting like a giant-sized bug in his bathroom. The costume isn't even fully like put on. You can see the guy's neck underneath the costume and this is only like a 3-second cutaway.
I didn't even notice.
It's really a bit of shit.
Well, besides, you know, looking absolutely fabulous, Vesta drops some serious knowledge nuggets throughout the episode.
She does indeed.
So one of them in this scene is I thought was kind of
hashtag Vesta's knowledge nuggets.
Yep. I thought it was kind of poignant. She said, well, when Sabrina asked her, you know, what she has against mortals or why she doesn't live in the mortal realm, she said, mortals have to work so hard for everything, tends to make them bitter.
Yep.
Like, yes. Well, yes, again, it does.
That's one of the things that you might go, well, you know what? That's kind of a bitchy thing to say.
But it's very true.
It's honestly true, yeah.
It's a perfect, I don't know.
Summary? Encapsulization? Description?
I can't think of the word.
Phrase?
I don't know.
It's true.
Not going to happen.
Hashtag true. All right. Moving forward. At the Spellman house, the aunties are zap-battling over a fabric armchair. Salem runs in and tells them that Sabrina's school just called and she missed her last 5 classes.
Which it was Salem the cat, which always makes me so happy whenever I see the actual cat rather than the animatronic.
Can you imagine if it was just like the animatronic cat next to a phone? It's like Danger Will Robinsoning all over the place.
Because he just had to stand there.
Yeah.
So he could have talked and he just would have stood there.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he walks up to the...
He does.
Yeah.
They start worrying about Sabrina and hoping that she's not in trouble. And as soon as she enters in her very couture dress, they tell her she's in big trouble. They ask her where she's been and where she got that very couture outfit. And she says that she's been in Paris with Vesta. And they freak out because Vesta's never in the mortal realm. They do, however, get a wonderful gift from their sister right away.
Prezzies.
Gum? It's French.
Gum? It's French.
I love that. I fucking love Raquel Welch in this role and otherwise.
Which French gum is not anything special.
Thank you for clearing that up. The aunts then start to lecture Vesta and Sabrina about her missing her classes. And Vesta gives a great gelato-based excuse for why Sabrina wasn't able to get back in time.
She was supposed to be in school. Well, we tried to make her last class, but then we stopped in Milano for gelato.
You have to.
Sabrina then apologizes and asks if she can...
You have to.
You do have to. Italian gelato is probably great. Probably.
Never had gelato?
I had never had gelato from Italy. you have to stop in Italy for gelato.
Milano.
Precisely. Sabrina even asks if she can keep her couture dress, and they say that she can, but she's
all
to go,
of her clothes because she has.
She has a bomb ass hat. Yeah. Also,
no, she's got a bunch of bags that she brought with her.
But first and foremost, she has a bomb ass hat.
Yep.
I have a story about that hat. Don't worry. So they tell her she can keep the clothes, but she has to go call Jenny for her homework and start it right now. As she leaves, the three sisters start talking about Sabrina, and Vesta notes that she's so hunger. She's so hungry. There you go. She's so hunger for life is amazing. There you go. Especially
she
since
need fun.
I translated this into Japanese and then back to English. Yeah. Especially since Hillary and Zellery over here are basically, like Chris, fun with old biddies.
I want that episode.
Chris is bidding for future episodes now. Zelda then comments that, hey, they have lots of fun. Okay? Don't call me a fun with old biddy, you wonderfully dressed sister of mine. That's Chris. And in fact, she goes on to describe the fact that she just received an invitation for a
symposium
meeting in Texas about a super collider from the visual engineers for the study of theoretical activity. Interesting name. Mm-hmm. Important name. Vesta then gets a great line in about theoretical activity.
It's better than no activity.
Hashtag true. Hilda then comes back from answering the phone and tells us all that she was just invited to play with the Conniff Trio in Orlando this Saturday. A dream come true, as I like to say. But then the aunts come to the realization that somebody has to stay with Sabrina. And, you know, Vesta just basically has her finger to her mouth the whole time going, I can do it. This is her plan, evidently. And Sabrina then comes down the steps telling us that she has to read 50 pages by Monday, to which Vesta says,
which is super easy.
It's really not that
hard.
Why
are you such a child?
Well, it is Jane the Obscure. Jude the Obscure.
So?
Anyway, Sabrina tells us this, and Vesta gives us the incredible line of, Kel Drag.
Jenny just gave me the bad news. I have to read 50 pages by Monday.
Kel Drag.
Seriously? I will say that for life.
Right?
Kel Drag.
It's great.
French. It's 90s. It's perfect.
Like a big cup of coffee. It's French. It's 90s. It's perfect. They ask Sabrina if she wouldn't mind staying at the Pleasure Dome with Vesta, and she initially holds back her excitement, but once she finds out it's okay, she gives us a big old woohoo. Now, before we get to the dome scene here, before we get under the dome, let's talk about this scene here, Chris.
Oh, so much to say.
I love the gum joke. I loved it a lot.
Little tiny little bags.
Yeah.
You'd think it was like earrings.
She had
definitely
them
not.
She had them wrapped. Sabrina's bomb-ass hat.
Okay.
I was watching it right before this podcast, mm-hmm. and our mom was in the room, and she was saying that because she has a wedding to go to next week, she was saying that she should get a hat like that hat for the wedding.
She should.
She should.
She should. Bomb ass hat.
She should get a bomb ass hat for the wedding.
I mean, seriously, she would be stealing the thunder.
The bride wanting a bomb ass hat. That'll teach her. Chris, what do you think of this scene?
By the way, that outfit, I always loved it because it's in the opening credits. It's very Breakfast at Tiffany's. Mm-hmm. It's also, like, for me, it reminds me a lot of Sabrina, the Audrey Hepburn Sabrina, and then the remake in the 90s, which I loved growing up.
Harrison Ford.
It was like 96, I think. I looked it up. It was 96.
Don't hold back, Chris. It's okay.
And, I mean, even though I think the clothes in the remake was actually more 90s, you know, more not as old school, like Parisian fashion. There is a scene where she just came back from Paris and she's standing waiting to be picked up and she's wearing a bomb ass hat with
pearls.
No, it was like I think it was a pantsuit. Mm. She might have been wearing pearls. I don't know. But yeah, so for whatever reason, her outfit and Vesta's outfit and the whole thing just made me remember Sabrina and made me think about that.
Vesta also has a nice hat. It's very feathery, but Sabrina's is more usable.
Yeah.
Like most of Sabrina's like Vesta wear, aside from one hideous piece, is like more, you know, real life
Yeah.
Less costumey. Not to say it looks better on her.
It's still costumey. I mean,
it would be more likely that you would see somebody wearing one of those pieces than you would Vesta's, you know, mummy tut outfit.
Yeah, that's
which, by the way, is awesome, and we'll get to that.
Well, I want to talk about Vesta's outfit too, because I do think it's a bomb ass outfit as well.
It too is bomb ass.
This episode, just what we're saying. She had on a suit jacket. Well, it's a suit, but it's a suit with a skirt.
Yeah.
And the jacket, the suit was black with white trim, and the bottom of the jacket flared out into sort of a peplum, but it was kind of like a high-low peplum where it was longer in the back.
It would be so much easier if I just made it the album artwork than if you described it for the next 4 minutes.
I still think it's interesting to describe these things because that's what it is. She had on white gloves.
Mm-hmm.
And
so did Sabrina, by the way.
She had a notched collar in her suit.
I love those.
This was the same outfit that she wore transformed into when she left her red suit.
Bomber red suit.
Yeah. To, you know, identify herself as
a witch.
Yeah, so it had a notched collar and it kind of like flicked up.
Yep.
It had the little peak of white.
All good.
And then she had a white feathered hat.
Yep. She was ready to go to a Southern black church.
But it was very French looking. It was very what people think of when they think of French fashion, yep. Or especially well in the 90s.
By the way, I didn't touch on it earlier, but it's worth saying now. This episode actually got a nomination at the 1997 Emmy Awards.
Hell yes,
for
it did.
Costuming. Didn't win.
It deserved it.
Diane Kennedy, I believe her name was nominated. And
girl, deserved it.
Because a lot of this is just great. All right.
I also think it was very Pretty Woman. The whole... It was very Sabrina for me, but it was also very Pretty Woman in terms of the look. The mm-hmm. clothes that... She wore a lot of bomb-ass hats in Pretty Woman.
Yes.
So...
And there will be many more hats in the future. In the immediate future, even. All right. We get to the Pleasure Dome, and what a sight it is. If you like tufted furniture, you are in for a treat. Vesta then uses some magic to change her and Sabrina's couture outfits into even more eccentric and couture outfits. Vesta then starts to explain the rules of the Pleasure Dome. Basically, no mortals allowed. That's it. Sabrina starts to comment on all of Vesta's doors, and she notes that behind each one is a wish fulfilled. Fulfilled.
Yeah, did you say fur-filled?
Fur-filled.
A fur-filled wish. There's puppies everywhere.
I wanted a pizza, but now it's filled with fur. We do see puppies, actually, later on.
Yes.
The first door Sabrina opens leads them backstage to a Brothers Junk concert.
See, I thought she said chunk.
It's hard to figure out. I had to look up the actual transcript.
Okay.
Which I do every episode, but I looked it up. It's Brothers Junk.
That's kind of gross. I don't want to be anywhere near my brother's junk.
Now, I don't think it's apostrophe S. I think it's just S. So, like, we are the brother's junk. Like, I'm Reginald Junk. That's Harry Junk. The second one has the worst name, by the way.
Okay.
He's Harry Junk. Okay.
Regiment.
By the way, once they open the door, and basically Brothers Junk is the band that sings Funky Song.
Yes.
The incredible Funky Song. Once they open the door, there is some just amazing dancing done by Melissa Joan Hart.
People.
By mostly Raquel Welch, though.
She gets into it.
It is stunning, as I will use over and over again here.
Incredible.
Incredible. Super great.
Bomb ass.
All right. They close that door.
Yes.
And Vesta has her open her personal favorite door, the Hall of Gratuitous Praise. Basically where people roaringly compliment your stinky farts.
Well, one guy does it especially loudly.
There is one guy who is reading down all
gorgeous,
of the descriptions.
You're fabulous. You're in.
Open this one. It's one of my personal faves.
What is it?
The Hall of Gratuitous Praise.
You're fabulous. We love you. You're gorgeous. You're beautiful. You're in. Yes, we are.
That was fun. You know, I feel really good about myself.
It's great. It's...
What are you in?
You are in.
No.
You are in mode, as no one says. Vesta also mentions that they have a 24-hour mall, a restaurant filled with ooey-gooey swimming desserts, bitch preach, and a room filled with gorgeous single men. This is where Vesta gets in a teaching moment about dating in the 1990s.
Knowledge nugget.
Sabrina is worried that she might not get to see everything because she's only there for the weekend, but Vesta gives us another ominous, we'll see about that, and offers her a bonbon. All right, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk here. First things first,
mm-hmm.
I'm the realist. The outfits that they change into. Sabrina is basically wearing a very, like, Cher, clueless, like, red dress with a big, like, red hat. Vesta's outfit, however,
mm-hmm.
is something to behold. Let's talk about it. This is the tut. This is the fucking...
Queen of the Nile.
This is the Queen of the Nile outfit. It's like a full-length gown with sleeves, very tight to the body, and it's gray...
And mock turtleneck or turtleneck?
I think
it was turtleneck.
Might have been. Gray velvet.
Yes.
With a complimenting...
Like the color of putties.
Yes. Actually, yes. Very, very true. More Power Rangers references on this episode than you can shake a power sword at.
Fanny at.
and basically like a Queen Latifah-like hat.
Yeah, it's like a very Queen Nefertiti like
very
outfit.
True. It is amazing. Like
she's a Nubian princess, except not at all.
It fits her
Nubian
beautifully. It's a stunning piece, stunning again. Drink. It's just gorgeous, and particularly when she's dancing, it makes her look fabulous.
The boobies,
the hips.
See,
she's been a sex icon since like the 60s, but even in 1996, stunning.
I don't like it as much as you do, just because I think it's a little too over the top.
Okay.
I really fucking hate that hat. Really fucking hate the hat.
It's not my favorite ever hat.
It's got sequins all over the front of it in this like... It's not a V pattern, but it's almost like a V. And then the inside has like a weird scoop thing.
Yeah.
And has another like literally one V.
Yeah. The next hat we see of hers is my favorite of her hats.
Okay.
In case you were keeping track on hat count here.
And the thing that I dislike the most about her outfit, mm-hmm. besides the hat, is the way it is gathered right at her
Oh,
hips.
You dislike that?
I dislike it because it's literally right over her crotch.
This is her dress, not her hat.
Yeah. The thing I dislike besides her hat the most.
I thought it like accentuated her hips perfectly, gave her that nice V on the hip. I thought it made her look even better. I like that feature a lot.
I don't like it because of the way it hangs. I mean, I think in certain outfits it could work, but my problem is that it's so much altogether, it's just a little overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And I mean, don't get me wrong, she's fucking slaying it. Like, she's wearing that dress. That dress is not wearing her.
We are definitely putting some respect on Vesta's name here.
Like, I'm sorry, she kills it, but it's just not a good look for anyone.
Yeah, I guess actually, you know what? I'm not really the biggest fan of the Queen of the Nile hat.
Yeah,
it's still an awesome look though. What do you think of the look of the Pleasure Dome itself?
Yeah, that was another gripe I had.
Too many doors. What's all over doors?
No, so I have an issue with the doors, but not the quantity of doors. Let me just... So, the issue I had with the Pleasure Dome was when you first come in, it's just every randomly shaped chair. It's like there are no normal chairs in... the other realm, it's not possible. Like,
well, this is specific to the Pleasure Dome.
Okay, I'm sorry. Apparently, when you enter the Pleasure Dome, you acquire some kind of disease which will turn your spine squiggly, which is why all the chairs are squiggles.
It's all like velvet
tufted squiggle chairs everywhere.
Yep, big like it's basically
reclining
like
chairs.
A teenage girl, a tween's dream room in 1996.
I mean, the
big
whole thing
furniture.
It's supposed to. Like most of the other realm, it seems, it's supposed to look like a dream sequence.
Yep.
So, anything unusual or...
Well, I don't like the furniture itself. I think the good thing about the furniture chosen here is, again, it illustrates the infinite possibilities in the Pleasure Dome. And this is just what Vesta prefers. So, she can have it in the Pleasure Dome.
I think it's just there to show the otherness.
Yep.
And I mean, it is luxurious. You've got velvet everywhere. There's a sense of luxury in that. The thing about the doors, though. So what bothered me about the doors is the doors are all wallpapered. Mm. If I've got a room full of doors, I want them to look like doors. Especially if it's a set. Like, I just didn't like the fact that they were wallpapered. I would have liked them to look like, you know, wooden doors. But I guess in terms of the other realm and the look they're going for, it makes more sense for them to be wallpapered. It's just...
And I actually... Well, I don't really...
Or if they were different, like if there was different wallpapers on each door.
I don't really love or hate like the decorative nature of the doors. I really like the use of the doors to illustrate all the freedom in, you know, the Pleasure Dome. Again, I think it's a smart visual interpretation of
that.
I
think it's interesting, yeah.
I also just like the idea of the Pleasure Dome as a concept in the show about magic. Uh-huh. I think it's super original. I think you get a lot of funny moments out of all the possibilities. And, I mean, this is why, again, why I love the show, because at its best, it gives you a unique take on something that we've all known, you know, since we were kids, like what magic is. That's why I like the show as a whole. By the way, does anyone like bonbons? Like,
yeah.
I mean, what are they? Are it's just like chocolate covered things?
I would assume they're like truffles.
Kind of like, yeah, but I literally went to the Bonbon Wikipedia page and all I found out was apparently Johann Strauss II composed a waltz named Wiener Bonbons. And that's bonbons, the joke.
It's French. It's like
good goods.
It's not truffles, but it's like small, little round
chocolates.
Yeah.
Yeah. Essentially. All right.
If you lived in the Pleasure Dome, what would be behind your door?
What would I? What would we?
Yeah. Like what? Okay, what would you want behind a door?
Elton John.
In concert, or like you know, in tea concert. With Elton John.
Elton John live. In a live solo in a like personal like space, like me and Elton John and a couple of friends sitting around a piano, that would be one of them. There'd be a room temperature tea dispenser with several flavored green teas. There'd be a chocolate cake room. There'd be a brownie room.
Gooey desserts.
And it would be slimming. Ab inducing chocolate cake.
Yes. Oh yes, I want that room too.
Just a room full of like puppies that I could go and roll around in. Yes,
puppies and kitties. Kittens are so cute.
Right.
All right. What's that? The pika.
Pikas are adorable. Cute. Like they're little like hamsters, but they're hamsters that live in the forest. And they gather.
The cutest sound.
They are adorable, and they gather flowers for the winter so that they can eat them, and then they dry them in the sun. They're very smart.
Yeah.
Speaking of being very smart.
Are you moving on? Because I have more to say.
What is it?
Sabrina's dress.
Yeah.
I think it was used in the intro for.
Yeah, one of the other episodes.
It was one of the episodes I was on because I think I mentioned it. Or I mentioned it to you at least.
Episode two.
And a furry hat.
Yep.
It's very clueless, but it makes her look like an adult-sized toddler.
Kind of.
And it makes me sad.
Well said.
Oh, and the nugget.
Yeah.
Vestas of wisdom. Nugget.
Yeah.
About the room filled with gorgeous single men. The longer you keep them waiting, the more they want you. More poignant wisdom from Vesta.
And that's a room filled with gorgeous single men.
Maybe I'll just take a peek in there.
No, don't. Darling, they know you're here. And the longer you keep them waiting, the more they'll want you.
Oh, so that's how it works?
Uh-huh.
So we go to apparently Texas, where Zelda enters what is obviously a janitor's closet and asks, who is obviously a janitor, if he knows anything about a super collider conference. Taking place in that room, as it's supposed to be in the room. Basically, Groucho here tells us that the invitation that he sees, that Zelda shows him, isn't here because, you know, nobody would fit here. It's a fucking janitor's closet. He asks her who invited her. She says the visual engineers for the study of theoretical activity. And he makes the obvious recognition and asks the obvious question of, why don't they just shorten it to Vesta.
Well, you know, the invitation says 107, and it's engraved.
Nice. Who's it from?
The visual engineers for the study of theoretical activity.
Why don't they just shorten it to Vesta?
We heard a little bit of Groucho there. Elsewhere in the world, Hilda is seen playing with her string trio. She's not playing the string trio. At the Daytona 500, surrounded by a bunch of screeching cars. But really, it kind of just looks like the set of outside Westbridge, but like to the side. Because you never see a car.
There's a bunch of like
It's like
flags.
A brick wall, and they put a couple of like flags up. That's it. But
and
still.
Some tires.
There's a tire around. Zelda comes up and tells her that Vesta set both of them up, obviously. I knew it all along. I would love if she like faked. I was just playing along. No. Groucho didn't help me at all.
I just really wanted to see that janitor's closet.
They do leave to then confront their sister, and as Hilda notes, at least she got a future booking out of the whole deal.
Yeah. Nothing says legitimacy like an engraved invitation, apparently.
It is.
It's engraved.
It's always nice to get an engraved invitation.
But I got an engraved invitation. Obviously, this is not fake.
As long as we're talking about this.
And the invitation looked totally
fake. Not only was it obviously a janitor's closet set, it was obviously Westbridge. It was obviously the Westbridge set.
They just threw some posters up.
It's the same poster from Westbridge. Like, they could have just not had it there and there would have been some deniability.
Yeah.
It's the same fucking poster we see like every episode that they walk by.
Yeah.
Good God, did you spend all your money on Vesta outfits? If so, good choice, but still.
Just take down the poster.
Honestly, or put up a sign that says like Texas Conference Room B. It's not that hard. I was so annoyed, even as a kid. I spat my milk out. All right. In the dome, under a dome, Sabrina is diligently reading Jane the Obscure. Jude the Obscure.
Every time. Why do you keep doing that?
I don't know. I'm obscure. While Vesta tries to get her to have a little bit of fun, Macarena fun. Zesta.
Zesta.
God damn it.
It's Zesta.
Vesta asks her if all the studying ever gets in the way of her fun, and she explains that she has to study and that she can't have fun all the time. Vesta is just dumbfounded, but tells her to think about whether or not
bitch?
That's true, you idiot, while they join a conga line. Cue the conga line. Basically, the conga line is made up of all the people that were in the...
room of Hall of Gratuitous Praise.
Precisely. Soon after they jump in the line, the aunties show up, and Zella ruins everyone's fun and just tells them to beat it. And the best thing is, the conga dancer is like... Sadly, they sadly conga with no music, which is the funniest thing you've ever fucking seen.
It's just all shuffly feet. It's like...
Sabrina scurries back to her book to pretend like she was reading the whole time. And the aunties call Vesta out on tricking them. Vesta gives us the wonderful response of, Der hey.
You tricked us to get Sabrina up here.
Der hey.
You just heard it. And again, she doesn't trick. She schemes.
With or the little hand gesture.
She does scheme like that, yes. They tell Vesta that Sabrina's coming home, but she reveals that since she's in the Pleasure Dome, she can make up her own mind and make her own choice of whether or not to go home. They all bicker, and Sabrina interrupts, telling them that she never knew she could choose to stay in the other realm if she wanted to. She decides that she's staying here in the Pleasure Dome, and we get a nice ole to close out the scene. All right, Chris.
Mm-hmm. The sassiest hand gesture that Melissa Joan Hart has ever given.
Since we're leading,
can I talk about my life?
Since we're leading with clothes, basically this is the clothes horse episode of Sabrina's Witch Trials. Vesta's Macarena outfit.
Vesta.
Vesta's Macarena.
So much to
jumpsuit.
Say.
I didn't like it that much.
Oh, I loved it.
I loved her fucking hat. I liked her black hat with like it was like tilted, but it was also like cupped her head. And then there was this big, like, sunburst of rhinestones on it. I liked
you
it
You were the worst
lot.
At describing these things.
Really?
Yes.
Somebody should draw what I describe, and we'll see how close it is to what she actually wore. Chris, tell us about Vesta's outfit here.
It's a velvet bell-bottom jumpsuit that's black velvet with white... I can't tell if it's like...
It's like viney flowers.
Yeah, but I can't tell if it's embroidered or printed. I think it might just be printed. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Oh, and I think she has like a big like diamond necklace on. It was fabulous.
Yep.
fit her like a glove.
It did
look perfect good for dancing.
To be fair, everything looks good on Raquel Welch in this episode.
But like, this is the kind of outfit that mere mortals cannot wear. Yeah. Like, it's a lot. And she pulled it off and she made it work.
I didn't like Sabrina's outfit here. I thought it was really, really bad.
I didn't like it. At the same time, I didn't think it was the worst. I think that I had a dress. It wasn't velvet, but it was similar.
This was velvet, black velvet in places, like paisley in other places, yeah, green.
It was like purple. A psychedelic paisley maxi dress,
yeah,
with slits on the side, I think. Like, I think there were slits on the side. Mm-hmm. And it was very colorful.
Yep.
I don't know. It didn't bother me as much. I think maybe because it was bright, but at the same time, it was simple.
I did not like it.
The pattern wasn't simple, obviously, but the cut was simple.
Yeah, yeah.
So it kind of balanced it out. I was okay with it. We'll get to my worst soon.
Okay.
So.
Hilda here is also wearing the outfit that she wore when Drell, when she goes and cancels the date,
yes,
on Drell.
That was the same thing she was wearing with the trio.
Back under the dome, Hilda is lecturing Sabrina about choosing the Pleasure Dome over school. But Sabrina just invites them to stay for dinner because they're having paella. Paella. All right.
Yeah.
Jokes are hard. Zelda basically no-sells it, saying, no thanks. We have to get back to our real lives on Earth, bitch. And then just like Z-snaps and she's out of there. She's not, though.
Z-snaps because she's Zelda.
That's right. She's also Zora. They just leave and... she tells Hilda that she has a plan and don't look back. And Zelda. I'm so tired.
All the names are Z's.
Hilda.
Zesta. Zelda.
Hilda tells us, not, she doesn't tell us anything. She looks back immediately because she's a dumb, dumb broad. Sabrina feels bad right away because she expected them to put up more of a fight. But Vesta doesn't really care. She's like, oh, now that the drama's over, who wants paella?
Paella.
Back at home, Hilda immediately questions Zelda's decision making and she wants to go get Sabrina. But Zelda explains that they're giving Sabrina the chance to change her mind and that she thinks she'll make the right move. Hilda then compliments Zelda for being sneaky, and Zelda notes that she is Vesta's sister, so she probably looks good in a jumpsuit. Hilda.
She would probably fucking slay a jumpsuit.
She would probably look fucking good in a jumpsuit. Hilda wants to be sneaky too, but she can't be because she can't stop looking back at things. This little exchange here, Chris.
Looking back and going.
Stop making references that take like 20 minutes to explain.
I can't help it.
The one thing I wanted to note here was I have a bit of trouble wrapping my head around the lesson of this episode because from the beginning it seems to be like, listen to your elders, mm-hmm, and/ kids really want rules. Like, kids may want, act like they want freedom, but in reality they want regulations mm-hmm, and strictness. But spoiler alert, but by the end of the episode, none of that is really why Sabrina comes back to the house. It's basically just that she misses her friends. So, I mean, I get what the story is. I just don't think it's really being done well.
Well, I think it's also that there's different kinds of fun and you can enjoy things that aren't necessarily, you know, what people on the outside would assume is fun. Like, later on when she gets out of the pool or whatever, she was swimming.
Yeah.
She was in the hot tub. Or, I don't know where she was.
She was in the hot tub.
When she gets out, she wants to curl up with a good book. And Vesta immediately is like, why? That's boring as fuck. What are you doing?
Loser. Also, she picked Jude the Obscure, yeah, which is not a good book. It's a book about... It's a book about a guy wanting to like marry his cousin.
I'll say. Get it? Because that's what Vesta says.
That's what she says. All right. Back under the dome. Vesta is getting a rub down from Discount Fabio. Mm-hmm. And she's enjoying it a lot.
That's good. So good. There's only one thing that could make this better. Now this is relaxing.
Just not as much as rubbing up on him.
She enjoys that a little bit more immediately after a bit of CNC Music Factory magic. Sabrina then saunters in from an afternoon of shoe shopping, Brad Pitt IMAX watching, and as we mentioned, tub thumping, hot tub thumping. She's wiped and she wants to curl up with a book, that book being a terrible book named Jude the Obscure. Vesta says that she can't spend Saturday night at home reading a book, not when she could be starring in her own rock video.
You can't stay home and read on a Saturday night, not when you could be starring in your own rock video.
Raquel Welch's pronunciation of rock video is, again, one of my favorite things from this episode. Just the way she says it and, like, the inflection she puts on it. And the fact that, like, this is easily, like, a 50-year-old woman here saying rock video. And it still kind of doesn't seem out of place just because she's, like, this eccentric character. I love all of it. Anyway, Sabrina loves the idea of starring in a rock video. And she goes on to describe the most ludicrous idea for a rock video that anyone has ever heard since Maroon 5's Misery. Keep beating him up around the town. That's pretty fucking dumb. You want to? Do you have the description in front of you? You want me to read it? I'll read
of
it.
What?
The rock video that she envisions.
Oh. It starts out with smoke.
We open on smoke rolling across the floor.
There are dancing clowns.
Cuba dancing clowns.
And then her in a really great outfit.
Why didn't it reveal me in a really great outfit?
There you go.
The fuck?
Simple.
What kind of rock music video is this? Just then, however, Vesta's maid enters with a phone. It's a call for Sabrina. It's Jenny, who apparently got the 17-digit area code number and all from her aunties. Sabrina explains that she's visiting family in Canada, you know, strange land. And Jenny reminds her about their movie date. Sabrina feels bad, but she totally forgot. And not being able to get back and not being able to invite Jenny over because of the one rule that the Pleasure Dome has.
Why can't she get back? I don't understand why.
Well, one, her rock video.
Just postpone it. It's the fucking Pleasure Dome. You can do a rock video any day.
Listen, if Sabrina was to really think out her problem for 3 seconds, she'd be living in the Pleasure Dome right now. Yeah. But she doesn't.
She'd be commuting.
She can't, you know, invite Jenny over. Can't get back for the obvious reason of her rock videos about to start. And she has to cancel on her friend. After she does, however, Vesta tries to cheer her up with the greatest antidepressant of all, a puppy.
Oh, I thought you were going to say latex boots.
That is the second greatest antidepressant of all. The puppy fails and she has the puppy taken away by a maid, or by a butler rather.
Yeah.
She starts talking to Sabrina instead. And Sabrina reveals that she just realized that if she stays in the dome, she'll never be able to see her friends again. Again, doesn't really make a lot of sense. Vesta comes and goes. But Vesta basically just says, well, idiot, you can just spy on them with my super secret Insidovision.
Which is an awful name.
I liked it.
Insidovision?
Again. Insidovision.
I don't want to see the inside.
No, it does sound like you're like spying on your friend's colon, but yeah. She shows Sabrina how the Insidovision works by showing her aunties doing an apparently a Beatles puzzle. Like, they're working on Ringo's nose, so I bet it was pretty cool. It's probably the one where they're crossing the street. That sounds like fun. All right, Chris. Before we get to the rock video fun and Nick Bakay doing some really good money-making work here, what do you think of this scene going back to Vesta's rubdown and all the way to Insidovision?
I really liked Vesta's outfit.
Yeah?
It was...
It's like a dressing gown.
It was a dressing gown. She had a head wrap. But it was like a 1940s, 1950s, like, glamour dressing gown.
It was actually really, really nice. It was like satin.
It was beautiful. It had Pleasure Dome. It was embroidered
with Pleasure Dome. That's why you get an Emmy nomination right there.
Attention to details.
I also kind of like Sabrina's, like, luminous green one-piece swimsuit and a little sarong she's wearing.
I fucking hated it.
Did you?
It was literally my least favorite of the whole episode.
Spoiler alert. It's going to the back of the closet, isn't it? I kind of liked it a lot.
Burn it.
I thought
it'll fun. It'll stink up the back of the closet, but burn it.
I thought it was fun and it made her body look good. Made her body rock. Body rock. All right. Enough of bad song references.
Never. Again.
Like I said, here is where we basically see why Sabrina ends up going back. It's not because she wants more rules. It's because the one rule that the Pleasure Dome has, not being able to invite mortals over or having mortals there, sends her going back to Earth. She doesn't want more rules. She, if anything, wants less rules, but she'll take the rules of one place over the rules of another.
She wants less all-encompassing rules, I guess.
Because
no mortals is just
flat.
A blanket rule.
Yeah.
I think, really, this all could have been solved if it wasn't so black and white. If it wasn't one or the other. If you had just said, hey, don't worry about it. You can go back and visit whenever you want.
Yeah.
In fact, as much as Vesta said that Hilda and Zelda were restrictive and were always giving her nose, Vesta is just one-upping it with basically saying, well, you're stuck here and this is all you can have.
She never tells her that she's stuck here. She tries to get her to stay here. She guilts her.
No, but what she says is,
let's get to it. Wait, let's get to it.
Yeah, she doesn't let her... She doesn't give her the option of going and coming back.
Right. She guilts her.
Yeah.
Where did she guilt her? Right here. Sabrina
she guilts her with fun.
She guilts her
but
with
you'll
fun.
Miss out on your music video.
That's true. I would stay for that.
Guilt. I've never heard of someone guilting you with fun.
Yeah. Well, Vesta is an originator
she
in many ways.
Makes it happen.
Sabrina first uses this super rude Insidovision to peep in on Salem and Harvey. Each one is jamming out to some funky song. Chris, quick question. Mm-hmm. Who sang it better, Harvey or Salem?
Salem.
Keeping in mind that it's obviously Salem.
Salem.
Shake your whammy fanny, funky song, funky song. Shake your whammy fanny, funky song.
Nick Baquet, one, has a great voice, so him singing obviously is going to be good. But Nate Richard, Harvey, singing funky songs seems like they only let him listen to the song and then asked him to sing it. As where Nick Baquet, it looks like they gave him lyrics. Like, Nate Richard just going, funky song, funky song, and jumping around his room.
I think that's on purpose because I think it's supposed to be, he's a dude, he's, you know, at home, he's not like singing it faithfully. He's rocking out and jumping around and just being crazy. And it's not supposed to be about an attention to lyrics or to
it is true
the song itself. It's more about expressing that sort of a
raw excitement.
Sort of a personality. That sort of a, you know, teen centric vibe.
He did look awful good sleeveless t-shirt, though.
I mean, he's freaking playing air guitar and jumping up and down. And I'm sorry, but you should not be playing air guitar to funky song.
That's true. There's very little guitar in it.
Right. Well, let's see what Harvey's doing.
Shake your lamp, baby. Funky song.
I don't want to see this.
He was jamming, and he hopes you like jamming, too. Sabrina then uses the Insidovision to peep in on Jenny, who she expects to be out, but is shock, horror, reading Jude the Obscure, nailed
just like Sabrina wanted to be.
Just like Sabrina. I mean. We also see in Jenny's room that apparently she inherited Drell's vines, because there's like
sunflowers everywhere.
Just wrapped around
it's like
her fucking...
sunflowers threw up in that room.
She clearly likes flowers. And Harvey, judging by his room, clearly likes a football poster and a lamp, because that's what was in his room. Sabrina again starts to feel bad, but Vesta just like, ain't no guilt here, bitch. Let's get your video ready.
Except the fun guilt that I gave you.
That's right. Let's do another outfit change. Come on. And they do.
Funky song.
And then we cut to Raquel Welch wearing the most dominatrixy thing you've ever seen Raquel Welch wear.
Yep.
That's just what it is.
It's just all latex.
Sabrina comes out. And she comments that she feels like she's going to go fly fishing.
Come on, Sabrina. I am dying to see what you look like.
I don't know whether to get funky or go fly fishing.
Bitch, that is not what that outfit is.
Yeah, the flyest ass fishing I did see.
You're going to be fishing for Johns because you look like a fucking prostitute. It's what she is. She is dressed like... the cartoon prostitute, not the cartoon prostitute, because very few cartoons have those. She's dressed like the prostitute that you would see in the back of like a sitcom episode where they go to like a jail. Like she's the one just like sitting on one of those chairs in the back of the scene.
But she's like a well-dressed hooker.
She has long hookery boots. She's got toot boots on. She's got her toot dress on.
So she, okay.
Hashtag toot boots.
Let's break it down. So she's got thigh-high latex boots. Black latex. I'd say they're latex, right? Or vinyl.
They're plasticky, yeah.
Yeah. Then she's got matching gloves. Matching, like, I don't know. It's further than elbow, I would say. Yeah. She's got a snow leopard mini dress with a halter neck, which is oddly cut. I don't know if it was the material, but when she moves, it seems very stiff.
I don't know. I thought it looked fine on her. It's leopardy, as you said.
No, but there's like a stiffness to the fabric.
I didn't notice.
Okay. Anyway, personally, when I was younger, I loved this shit. I love that outfit.
I was like, I love looking like a prostitute. it's fine. Don't worry. You can dress as you want.
It's sassy.
The music video starts with clowns and smoke and all. Mm-hmm. Sabrina's initially into it. She sings the first first chorus and everything. However, she quickly cuts off the music and she tells Vesta something feels wrong. She goes on to tell Vesta that she feels that she belongs at the movies with Jenny, not in a music video. Vesta here starts to try and drag her over to the Hall of Gratuitous Praise to cheer her up a little, but Sabrina tells her that she'd rather go home. Vesta, as we mentioned, then starts away on the guilt trip, telling her that she'll be lonely without Sabrina, but after Sabrina invites Vesta to come stay in the mortal realm, she thinks better of it and is just like, fuck, where did I put that puppy? I'm gonna get that puppy back. Vesta then kind of gives Sabrina a hug in a very sweet way, which I thought also was kind of weird because you're kind of telling the story, but she's almost trying to trick her into staying. But she's like,
because she really wants her to be with her.
Yeah. Again, there's not.
And also because she's selfish.
The story of this episode isn't really clear. It doesn't stop it from being an amazing episode. Yeah. So Sabrina gets her backpack. They hug. She heads back to try and catch a movie with Jenny. Vesta then tries and she feels bad. She ponders what to do. She puts it together. Heads over to the Hall of Gratuitous Praise and cheers herself up a little. It's
so empty. But it works.
Chris, Vesta, do you know the phrase clapback? I'm going to use it here.
No.
Clapback is like when somebody says something to you and you just shut them down.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very trendy. Sabrina complains that she doesn't like her outfit or whatever. Like, she thinks she's going to go fly fishing or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Vesta hits her with the clapback of, deal with it. And then they just move on. She's done with her shit.
Yeah.
All right. Not all of the 20 outfits I give you can be great.
She also drops a knowledge nugget in the shape of, there's no room for sensible shoes in rock and roll.
That is true. Yep. It's all good. What can you say bad about any of this? Nothing. We're just running through and having fun. That's what happens on this show. Cut to the house. Sabrina arrives back home and informs Salem that she saw his musical pursuits. And then Salem, Nick McKay, gives us his best Darth Vader impression.
No!
No! No!
That was pretty good.
We'll find out. Downstairs, Sabrina comes downstairs and announces that she's back home. The aunties play all coy and like, oh, are you back? What's your name? Sabruno? Good to see you again. And she asks them if she can go to the movies with Jenny, as she made a commitment to her, and she feels that she should obligate. She's obligated.
She should obligate.
She should obligate. She feels obligated to carry that agreement out. She says thanks. She also mentions here just the obvious lie of, you know, I realize that without rules, you don't know where the fun is. Here, I'll put the exact quote in.
What happened? Didn't you like the Pleasure Dome?
It was okay. But the truth is, without can'ts and don'ts, it's hard to know where the fun is.
That's just straight bullshit.
I don't think it's bullshit.
All right. You know where the fun is? Fucking Pleasure Dome. Lots of fun there. Puppy fucking pools. Pools filled with puppies, which sounds more sad than fun. Like cake houses. All that fun. Cake cups. Both of those things. That's what's fun. Anyway. They say she can go.
She's a witch. She can zap cake cups there anytime.
She rarely does.
She could. That's because she's an unimaginative bitch.
Okay.
So Bruno.
We tell her she can go to the movies with Jenny, even though it's late, but she can't be out past one, and she can't wear those boots. She changes into basically the same outfit she was wearing in the beginning of the episode, but I caught the difference. Yeah. No suede vest. It's now the
it's
same,
nighttime, so it's a little chilly.
It's jacket weather. She puts on a similarly colored suede jacket. Again, she leaves and she thanks him for not making a big deal out of all this. And they're like, oh, whatever. Bye, John. And after she leaves, they excitedly celebrate. And we get the phrase, deal of the century. Well done, Caroline Ray. You
Cromwell rules.
Cromwell rules. She just exclaims it. All right. Let me just do the credit roll here because it's very little. As the credits roll, we cut back to Mr. Poole, see how he's doing. And he's still rumbling with that giant bug Vesta gave him. He summons the Megazords.
The clap.
He's fighting with the clap. He summons the Megazords and then he uses the power sword to defeat it. Nope. He basically does like a Tom Cruise jump out of his bathtub while spraying air freshener at it, and this works. And the big bug
wakes up from his dream.
The big bug starts to die, but he wakes up on the bathroom floor, noting that sushi and Kafka don't mix. I got that reference.
I did too.
And then he notices a bug on the floor and he sprays it as the episode closes. Okay, Chris. These last two scenes and then the show as a whole. What did you think of everything from when Sabrina got home to this and the Darth Vader-y thing to the ending?
I thought it was cute. I liked that they tried to hide and pretend that they weren't waiting for her to come home and try to play it cool. I thought it was funny that, you know, she hated her boots so much and Vesta was basically forcing her to wear them. And that's the first thing that, you know, Hilda and Zelda were like, no, you can't have those.
Take them boots. Yep.
Which is really what she wanted all along. She wanted to take off those fucking boots.
Right, but she could have taken them off and still.
She couldn't have because Zelda's like, Zelda.
Ah!
Vesta.
Not so
but
easy.
I said the wrong name. I didn't add a weird letter to it.
You don't know about the other aunt, Zesta. The one whose ranch dressing recipe is craved around the other realm.
And I also found it interesting. Well, I mean, she really had to because she looked like a skank. But that she said you can't wear those boots, but she changed her whole outfit.
That's right. All right, so I can wear the whore dress.
And just wear sneakers with your That's mini right. dress. I mean, super.
In case the police show up, you got to be able to run real quick.
Yeah.
Like I said, I just think it's a bit of a muddled message because while they're playing it off as like, see, Sabrina really wanted rules the whole time. In reality, the story is just that Sabrina missed her friends and wasn't able to see her friends. So she went back to where her friends were.
Her friends. And
I'm Irish now. I'm on Zesta.
It's just a lot of friends.
And there you go. So basically, I think the story is a bit muddled. I also thought that this was one easy day at the fucking office for Paul Feig. Like, okay, we need you to hop out of an office, out of a classroom. We need you to, tussle with this bug for a while. We need you to jump out of this bathtub, spraying something, and then wake up on the floor, and then you can leave.
See, the thing with me, even when I watched it the first time, was that I wanted his skin condition when he runs out because his skin is all itchy. I wanted that to be a story that continued. So I wanted the thing that was keeping him occupied to be related to the thing that initially drew him out of the room. So the fact that he had a skin condition and then randomly a bug trapped him in the bathroom kind of seemed disconnected to me.
He should have been coughing instead of like hop jumping.
He should have been like, his skin could have been bubbling up. I mean, obviously it's not as, you know.
Spent all that money on Vesta's outfits.
I don't know. Just a lot of makeup.
It's a fair point. I think that one of the funny things to note from like looking at this episode as a whole,
where he had started to turn into a bug, his skin started to.
I bet they did all of these things and like they chose the Tom Cruise one out of all the potential ones
because it's most 90s
and it's actiony
of the time.
One of the fun things to note about the whole episode is how, despite like the first like 15 minutes of the episode, really feel like it's all set up. And then the show just ends. And like Sabrina goes back. It's like, look at all these fun things that are happening. But there's never really like an important, like nothing really important happens in the second act to make you care about what happens in the third act. The second act is just like, look at all the zany things happening in the Pleasure Dome. And by the third act, she's just like, well, I guess I'll go home. Like, it's awesome to watch as individual scenes where Raquel Welch is just like chewing scenery and being fucking incredible. But the story, I feel, is a bit muddled as a whole in this episode. What did you think? What do you think about the episode as a whole?
I loved it.
Yes. I also want to be clear.
It's one of my favorite episodes.
I still agree. It's an amazing episode.
I mean, it sounds stupid, but what really makes this episode is the costumes.
Yeah.
And the use of fashion and what that fashion is showing in terms of the story. I mean, yeah, you know, obviously they're talking. Obviously there's, you know, words being said in throughout the episode, but your eyes are just fucking dazzled the whole time.
Absolutely.
I mean, that is what this episode is about. The story, I think that's why it's muddled, because the attention and the reason people really love it is because this is just a fucking feast for your eyes.
And to be fair, it's the Vesta show. Like,
it is.
It every time she's on screen, your attention is always on her, even if somebody else is saying something, because Raquel Welch is such a wonderful actress that even when she doesn't have anything to say, there's always something to see her doing,
yeah,
or something to notice her about. That made perfect sense if you listened back a couple of times.
If you just like,
and you know, this is the point where I would usually ask you to rank this episode on a scale, a TGIF scale. I'm just going to ask you why you thought this was a Boy Meets World, because it's obviously a Boy Meets World.
It's definitely a 5.
Yeah.
I think for that reason, I think visually, just in terms of the fashion, it's amazing. It's just fun to watch.
God, if I could get a Vesta action figure in that fucking red suit, yeah, I would own it.
But the thing is, I mean, this is, you've got to think you're either a kid or a teenager, most yep, likely watching this. And this is literally your dream. I mean, not just everyone wants to be a witch. Everyone wants to go live in the other realm.
Everybody wants to be a cat.
You've got the pleasure dome where literally anything is possible. You've got doors with every wish at your fingertips. It's literally every kid's dream. And I think for that reason, there's something incredibly enticing about it. Mm-hmm. Then you're just, you know, enjoying the hell out of watching people wear outfits that you couldn't possibly ever wear in real life, but that you would just love to if you ever had a reason to.
And let's be clear, there's a lot of like legitimately funny scenes in this episode too. Like, a lot of the exchanges
Kel
are funny. Kel Drag is amazing. Fucking Funky Song is bae. That's right. I hate that phrase and I use it because that's how much I love Funky Song. When I found out I couldn't buy it on MP3, I cried for 3 days. Not related to anything.
That's true.
I was really fucking upset. I moped around the house. It's a stupendous episode, to use my hyperbole, as I often do. I loved it a lot. Now, Chris, the more important scene, the more important aspect of the closing ceremonies here on Sabrina's Witch Trials, for this episode especially, back of the winning closet award, who won it for you? I mean, Melissa Joan Hart won it, right? Like, this is a Sabrina one. But you...
I mean, because Raquel Welch can do no wrong.
Right.
As much as I really didn't like that gray,
yeah,
just because it was just too fucking much.
It was
the worst
enough.
Outfit for me was definitely Sabrina's neon green plasticized bathing suit.
Fair enough.
It was like Nickelodeon slime, but made into like a plastic metallic swimsuit.
Oh, yeah. You don't like the sarong that came with it?
It was hard for me to notice it because my eyes would not leave.
Fair point.
That green plastic.
Mine was, of course, that Michigas of a dress that she has with Sabrina
the Paisleys.
Has with the paisley and the velvet and the maxi and all that. It looks like an unattractive Rorschach test.
I think one thing that's, I don't know, it's not important to note, but one thing that I really enjoyed, which is, it's something that I think really 90s fashion just characterized, and you see it a lot in terms of the series as a whole, or, you know, in the first season, definitely. There is a lot more attention to texture of fabric. Got a lot more velvets and suede,
a lot of like
corduroys.
Ribbed shirts.
It's a lot more about texture than we really have now.
Yeah.
I mean, I think
now it's more pattern.
Now it's more layering and
layering was big then though.
But I think it was different. I think then there was more of an attention to the fabrics,
mm-hmm,
in terms of like the texture, the feel. Not that there is a certain sense of luxury in wearing velvet or wearing suede. It's something that's nice to the touch. But it's just interesting to me that sort of difference that we don't really have nowadays. And I think this episode kind of hiss on that more than any other episode so far, just because
this is the clothes episode.
It's everything is either velvet or suede or latex. It's, you know, something that's interesting texturally, and it's just, it makes it that much more interesting to watch.
Mm-hmm. And that illustrates the importance of texture in clothing in general. Just, you know,
yeah,
the importance of not wearing cotton everything, because then you kind of just like blend together.
Don't tell Zooey Deschanel.
Take that, bitch. Chris, thank you for being
here.
Fabric
of our lives.
Thank you for being here. An incredible episode, as most of them are, that you are on.
Oh yeah, I'm fabulous.
You are.
I'm the regular best.
Let's not get crazy here. All right.
Shut up, Salem.
Let's not get it twisted here. That's still pretty good. Thank you for being here. Read what she writes over at chrisconquers.com. It's all good. Beauty stuff.
Romance-y stuff.
Romance novel stuff. A lot of reviews of those. Maybe there's an editorial about patterns or about fabrics coming up real soon. Maybe. Who knows?
Velvet is in.
Also follow her on Instagram.
That's
Chris
not
Conquers.
A thing. Don't look for that.
It'll be there.
It won't happen.
I'll write it. Follow her on Twitter at Chris Conquers. And Chris, would you like one more fortune for the road?
Sure.
Okay.
I want to go with pink.
Pink. P-I-N-K. Number 7834.
7.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 6, 2, 5.
6.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And 1, 6, 2, 5.
1.
Okay. Chris's fortune for the road is... you will go to the dance with an athlete daredevil rock musician.
Hell yeah. Chad Corey Dylan Bay.
You can follow Sabrina's Wish Trials on Twitter at Sabrina Podcast, on Facebook at facebook.com/Sabrina's Wish Trials, on SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/Sabrina's Wish Trials. And you can listen to and subscribe to Sabrina's Wish Trials on SoundCloud.
Did you just say files?
Did I? Don't know.
I think you did.
The show's name is Sabrina's Witch Trials. Okay, look at the descriptor. It's there. You can follow and subscribe to this show, safer bet, on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play podcast section, and your podcast aggregator
of
choice.
I'm sure if you pick up a tin can and put it against your wall, you might hear it.
Next episode, we're going to knock the magic up to 11 with Magic Joel.
Joel.
That's right. Including that incredible scene where like he's peeping on Libby, so get ready for all that.
Such a little perv.
But in,
no Libby in this episode.
No Libby in this episode.
I think there was just too much fabulous.
Oh, absolutely. You couldn't even fit her in anywhere.
No.
Until next episode, however, we will see you in the other realm.
So, a symposium in Texas. Who invited you?
The visual engineers for the study of theoretical activity.
I suppose theoretical activity is better than no activity at all.
You are not going to believe this. I've just been asked to play with the Conniff Trio in Orlando this Saturday. It's a dream come true.
Hilda, lucky you.
I know you mean that sarcastically, but thanks.